they love, they end up nonviolent fugitives from the law, and they have a series of adventures that conclude not only with what may be the only cross-country ski chase scene in American literature, but consuming an inordinate amount of Vermont's great product, the micro-brewed beer in which we lead the world in production.
Well, we'll do a web exclusive. You can check it out at democracynow.org about Radio Free Vermont, A Fable of Resistance. It's the first novel of our guest, the founder of 350.org, Bill McKibben, a proud Vermonter himself. And that does it for our broadcast. We have paid internships. You should check the applications at democracynow.org. Special thanks to Charina Nadura, the Rafi Lerma interview.
KBOO Portland.
Let me tell you the story of a soldier named Dan.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society in Portland. The Art of the Protest Song partners the Oregon Historical Society with four local folk musicians to present a showcase of popular and topical protest songs from the Kennedy era, as well as original songs focused on contemporary issues. This event is free and open to the public. Again, that's the Art of the Protest Song, Sunday, November 12th at 2 p.m. at the Oregon Historical Society, 1200 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space in Portland. Untold Stories is Know Your City's second annual benefit gala, and it raises essential funds to further Know Your City's programs of engaging everyday Oregonians in the history, culture, and civics of the region. This year's gala will bring together over 150 guests for an unforgettable evening, including hors d'oeuvres, drinks, dessert, performances from local talent, and a paddle raise. Again, that's the second annual Know Your City Gala, Untold Stories, on Thursday, November 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the EcoTrust Event Space, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue, Suite 200 in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, open daily December 16th through December 24th for the Festival of the Last Minute. Saturday Market offers handmade art, crafts, and other gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest and is located at 2 Southwest Ankeny in Waterfront Park. Information can be found at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. Coming up next is your Friday Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Multnomah County Commission voted 4-1 to sell the Wapato Jail in North Portland.
Despite relentless attacks by the Trump administration, enrollment in Obamacare has started out much stronger than in 2016.
And we'll speak with Neely Yosha about Outside the Frame's new film on youth homelessness.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 10th, 2017, the 294th day of the Trumpocalypse. I'm Ruben Lawrence.
And I'm Linda Olson-Osterland. Yesterday, the Multnomah County Commission voted 4-1 to sell the Wapato Jail in North Portland to a private developer for $10.8 million. Commissioner Loretta Smith was the lone dissenter. She called for the jail to be opened as a homeless center and treatment center. Homeless advocates noted that the jail could quickly be opened at relatively low cost and would be able to provide shelter to about a third of the estimated 1,600 people currently living on the streets in Multnomah County. But the other commissioners felt that the distance from existing homeless services and the lack of regular scheduled public transportation made the site impractical. Commissioner Lori Stegman also pointed out that the building is located in a commercial zone and said, quote, "We're looking at a long legal battle to resolve all these issues," end quote. After agreeing to the sale, the commission then voted unanimously to spend the money from the sale for yet-to-be-identified homeless and affordable housing services. The 150,000 square foot jail cost $58 million to build in 2004, but was never used for its intended purpose. It has been rented to a film studio for movie productions, but has otherwise sat idle, costing the county an estimated $300,000 a year to maintain it. The $10.8 million offer was submitted by Kehoe Properties Northwest, who reportedly intends to use the facility as a medically related distribution center.
The New York Times has identified Reed College as one of the 10 colleges with offshore investments in the fossil fuel industry. The disclosure comes from the Paradise Papers, a collection of over 13 million electronic documents relating to offshore investments that was recently leaked to a German newspaper. The offshore investments are managed by Appleby, a Bahamas-based law firm that assists companies and wealthy individuals in moving money to offshore tax havens to avoid paying taxes in their home jurisdiction. Apple, Facebook, Walmart, the Queen of England, and U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross are among the slew of multinational companies and super rich who are taking advantage of Appleby's services. Reed College is invested in a Cayman Island company called NCAP Capital Fund. NCAP is a private equity firm that buys and develops North American oil and gas properties. As a nonprofit, Reed College doesn't pay taxes. There are no legal questions associated with their investment in NCAP, but the ethics of the investment are likely to be questioned by many in the Reed student body. Students have been sitting in since October 23rd to protest the college's investments in Wells Fargo and have been pushing for many years to get the college to divest its fossil fuel investments. As recently as 2014, the school's board declined to disinvest from fossil fuels.
People in Oregon and across the nation staged a walkout yesterday to send a message to members of Congress that it's time to pass a new DREAM Act. They're also advocating for a clean legislation that does not hurt other undocumented people who are not currently eligible under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, otherwise known as DACA. Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service has more.
People in Oregon and across the nation are staging a walkout to send a message to members of Congress that it's time to pass a clean DREAM Act. With only a month left in the 2017 session, advocates for immigrants' rights hope to spur the House and Senate to pass a bill protecting recipients of Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals from deportation. More than 12,000 Oregonians received DACA protections, allowing them to go to school and work, including Leo Reyes, co-founder of the Oregon DACA Coalition. He says it's helped him live a life without constant fear of deportation.
So there's a huge component for me relating to self-esteem and being able to acknowledge that my status does not in any way diminish my humanity.
Oregon would lose almost $630 million in GDP annually without DACA workers, according to research by the University of Southern California and the Center for American Progress. In Salem, the walkout is scheduled for 1:30, followed by a rally at the state capitol at 3. DACA protects about 800,000 people nationwide. Reyes says it's important that the DREAM Act stay clean. That is, legislation that doesn't increase funding for immigration enforcement, attack sanctuary cities, or hurt undocumented people not eligible for DACA in any other way. He says he doesn't want to see DACA recipients used as a bargaining chip.
I really see this as being an opportunity for us to build up our community and build up these individuals to be able to move forward in their lives and really continue with that pursuit of a dignified quality of life. But that cannot come at the expense of their families.
President Donald Trump ended the DACA program more than 2 months ago. He says it is now up to Congress to come up with a solution. Otherwise, protections will completely expire in March. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The drama surrounding the leadership of the Portland public school system continued yesterday with the announced firing of Deputy CEO Yusuf Awad. The surprise move came despite the fact that he had previously earned high praise from both school board members and parents. Awad claims that his firing by Superintendent Guadalupe Guerrero was in retaliation for him questioning the actions of school board chairwoman Julia Brim Edwards during a closed session of the school board. In August, Brim Edwards reportedly launched an investigation into Awad for conducting a consensual relationship with a subordinate. Awad claims that he had reported the relationship to his previous boss, who had given his approval, and that the investigative report cleared him of any wrongdoing. After the investigation concluded, he accused Brim Edwards of having personal reasons for scrutinizing him. He said that Brim Edwards went after him because she wanted to be superintendent, and he had said that she wasn't qualified. For her part, Brim Edwards has issued a written statement saying that the board was not involved in the decision to fire Awad. He has also accused Brim Edwards of violating state law by authorizing district spending on an outside lawyer to investigate him without seeking a vote of the board in an open session. Awad is reported to be considering his legal options. "I'm sure that it's retaliation," Awad told the Portland Tribune. "I'm going to sue."
A licensed Oregon marijuana supplier has been arrested in Nebraska and charged with drug trafficking. Richard Wilkinson of Damascus, Oregon, was arrested after a traffic stop in Lincoln, Nebraska. Deputies found 110 pounds of marijuana and 25 pounds of cannabis extract in the U-Haul van he was driving and charged him with intent to deliver. They also arrested and charged John Carlson of Cranston, Rhode Island, who was following Wilkinson in a second car. Deputies believe that the men were transporting the marijuana to a state where medical marijuana is legal, but Sheriff Terry Wagner said that it's still illegal in Nebraska. According to a report in the Oregonian, Oregon Liquor Control Commission spokesman Mark Pettinger said this was the first known case of a licensed Oregon marijuana supplier being arrested on drug trafficking charges in another state. The Lancaster County Department of Corrections reported that Wilkinson and Carlson were arraigned and made bail yesterday. They're scheduled to appear in court on December 7th.
Despite the Trump administration's steep cuts to federal advertising and enrollment assistance budgets, the number of consumers signing up for plans under the Affordable Care Act, widely known as Obamacare, has surged during the first few days of open enrollment. According to one Trump administration official, more than 200,000 Americans chose a plan on November 1st, the day open enrollment began. That's more than double the number of consumers who signed up on the first day of enrollment last year. More than 1 million people visited healthcare.gov, the official federal website, the official said, amounting to a roughly 33% increase in traffic compared with 2016. Many ACA advocates had been concerned that consumers wouldn't sign up for the coverage because Congress has repeatedly tried to repeal the 2010 law this year, and President Trump has described it as a failing and virtually dead plan. But others have suggested that the extensive media coverage of efforts to roll back Obamacare have actually raised the overall awareness that is helping to fuel the increase. Interested Oregonians are urged to visit the state's website at oregon.healthcare.gov or the federal site at healthcare.gov to learn more or to enroll. Open enrollment continues through December 15th.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Native American Voice at 6. At 7, we will have a special program in memory of Fred Cole, Portland rock and roll hero from bands like Dead Moon, Pierced Arrows, The Rats, and many others. Tomorrow's weather calls for a morning showers with a cloudy afternoon. Temperatures will be in the mid-50s. East of the Cascades and Hood River, you should expect a cloudy and slightly cooler day with a chance of showers. On this day in 1969, the children's television show Sesame Street premiered on PBS. To date, it has won over 160 Emmy Awards. A 1996 survey found that over 95% of American preschoolers had watched the show by the time they were 3 years old. The quote of the day is from singer-songwriter Norah Jones, who recently said, quote, "The coolest thing I've gotten to do in the last few years is guest star on Sesame Street," end quote.
Despite a chorus of calls from members of his own party, Alabama GOP Senate candidate Roy Moore told supporters that he would not withdraw from the race. The calls came as a result of a Washington Post report claiming that 30 years ago, Moore had inappropriately touched a teenage girl. The story quotes Lee Korfman, now 53, who said that Moore kissed her, touched her over her underwear, and attempted to place her hand over his underwear when she was 14 years old. Moore blasted the accusations in a fundraising email to supporters. He called the allegations, quote, "attacks from the Obama-Clinton machine's liberal media lapdogs," end quote. Alabama State Representative Ed Henry went one step further and said the people accusing Senate candidate Roy Moore should be prosecuted. But the accusations prompted a number of prominent Republicans, including Senators Mitch McConnell and John McCain, to call on Moore to step aside. Former Massachusetts governor and presidential candidate Mitt Romney said, quote, "innocent until proven guilty is for criminal convictions, not elections. I believe Lee Korfman. Her account is too serious to ignore. Moore is unfit for office and should step aside," end quote. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders told reporters that President Trump does not believe that, quote, "a mere allegation," end quote, from many years ago should destroy a person's life. She went on to say that Trump thinks that if allegations are true, Moore will do the right thing and step aside. Moore is the GOP's nominee to replace Jeff Sessions, whom President Trump tapped to lead the Justice Department earlier this year. He is running against Democrat Doug Jones in a race where Moore has been considered the frontrunner.
Yesterday, in a rare display of cultural sensitivity, the United States Senate unanimously approved a resolution that requires sexual harassment training for all senators. The measure was introduced by Republican Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa and Democrat Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. It was co-sponsored by Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky and Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York. In a statement, Senator Klobuchar said, quote, "sexual and workplace harassment is a widespread problem that affects too many women and men in too many places, professions, and industries," end quote. This was not the first time that senators have called for the training, but the urgency increased when over 1,000 former congressional aides in both parties called for a more aggressive response to sexual harassment. Under the legislation, lawmakers, aides, and interns will be required to complete the training within 60 days and repeat the training at least once during each congressional session. The measure also requires harassment training covering discrimination based on race, religion, disability, and other criteria.
According to a report by the Wall Street Journal, Special Counsel Robert Mueller has gathered sufficient evidence to bring charges against former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and his son Michael Flynn Jr. The Flynns are under investigation for involvement in an alleged plot to kidnap Turkish dissident cleric Fethullah Gulen and fly him to an island prison in Turkey in return for $15 million. Gulen is a 75-year-old imam who went into self-imposed exile when he moved from Turkey to the United States in 1999 and settled in Sailorsburg, Pennsylvania. Turkey's president, Recep Erdogan, believes that Gulen was a mastermind behind a July 2016 coup attempt and has repeatedly asked that Gulen be extradited to Turkey. The fact that Mueller is now reported to have gathered sufficient evidence to bring charges against Flynn and his son can only increase concerns for Trump's legal team. Flynn has previously expressed interest in an immunity deal, and since no indictment has been made public, many are speculating that Mueller is hoping to negotiate a deal with Flynn in return for testimony that would bring him closer to Trump. Ryan Goodman, a New York law professor and former Pentagon counsel, said, quote, "If the facts involving Flynn and his son are true, or even mostly true, it indicates an incredible propensity for outrageously illegal conduct." End quote.
On Monday, ISIS fighters attacked a television station in the Afghan capital, Kabul. At least two fighters engaged Afghan security forces for around 4 hours, during which time one of the attackers detonated a suicide bomb and a security guard was killed. However, despite the disruption, the fact that most of the staff were either hiding or being ushered out by security forces, the station went off the air only briefly. And as soon as the attack ended, news presenter Parwazi Sopay went on the air greeting the audience with calm and saying in Pashto that the staff was safe. He then read the news with both hands bandaged. During the attack, he had punched out a small office window so that he and his colleagues could escape, picking out the pieces of glass so that others could crawl through safely. Sopay later told Al Jazeera that after the harrowing experiences, he and his colleagues, quote, "knew we were doing something right," end quote. Journalists from around the world have reacted to the resilience of the station, which had not received any threats prior to the attack. In the words of Spanish reporter Carmen Fernandez, much respect.
And now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We saw our volunteerism rates go through the roof. People were energized. They just said, we want to win, and we want to win big. And that's what we did. We had a huge, huge victory here.
New Jersey AFL CIO President Charles Wilkanek talking about the remarkable, high-energy organized labor political machine that put a more pro-labor government in place in New Jersey from the governor's office on down.
It was a real big night for the labor movement here in New Jersey. We won the governor's race. We picked up a Senate seat. We picked up two assembly seats. We also ran 58 union members, rank and file union members that work every day for political offices all across the state. And we have 45 winners. We were out every weekend, every night, and of all the other constituency groups within the Democratic Party, there's no question about it. When you talk to Murphy and his campaign, it was the labor movement that was the number one machine, so we're pretty happy.
Well, Kenick says GOP Governor Chris Christie will go down as the worst governor in New Jersey history. Voters were highly motivated against Christie and his GOP. Well, Kenick believes we'll see a similar energized labor and Democratic campaign in the midterms against Trump and his party in 2018.
The indications are there. I mean, you saw Virginia, you saw all across the country, New York, where there were mayor's races. I mean, the Democrats really did very well. So I think that's a telltale sign that if Trump and company doesn't get their act in order, that they're going to pay a big price for this.
On Veterans Day, the Union Veterans Council wants you to know that among the rights veterans have fought and died for are collective bargaining labor rights. Here are some pro-union veterans speaking in excerpts from a Union Veterans Council video.
Sam Phipps, served in the United States Army as an infantryman, fought in Afghanistan in 2011-2012. Now I'm a proud union member of Local 562. Getting into Local 562 is just, it's given me a chance at a good life. Being able to support not only myself, but more importantly, my family.
Sabrina Harris, U.S. Army, Biological Chemical Warfare, a proud member of AFG Local 96. The union has given me stability in my life.
Jason Barker, United States Army, served in Iraq, now a member of IFF Local 73 St. Louis Firefighters. Being a firefighter and a union member, you'll experience the same brotherhood as you do in the military.
Joe Clarkson, I'm a member of AFGE Local 96. I served in Iraq, in Kosovo, in the U.S. Army Reserve. To me, the union means brotherhood. And when I think of the brotherhood, I think of the phrase on the Union Hall wall that says, "United we bargain, divided we beg."
WIN is America's multimedia news voice for workers. Support WIN's worker news mission at workersindependentnews.com. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit workersindependentnews.com.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Supreme Court denied an Arizona request to review the legality of the Indian Child Welfare Act. KAWC's Stephanie Sanchez has more.
In the case between SS versus Colorado River Indian Tribes, the U.S. Supreme Court recently denied a petition for writ of certiorari filed by the Goldwater Institute. The petition alleges the Indian Child Welfare Act, a federal law that established standards for the placement of Native American children in foster and adoptive homes, is unconstitutional. Due to the Supreme Court's denial of the petition, the decision from the Arizona Court of Appeals upholding the ICWA will stand. Congress enacted the law in 1978 after determining that Native American children were being removed from their homes and communities at an alarming rate compared to non-Native children. Goldwater Institute's Vice President for Litigation, Timothy Sanfer, said Native American children deserve the same protections provided to all other American children and will continue to work to give Indian children the same protections. In a release, the Colorado River Indian Tribes opposes the continued onslaught against the ICWA. CRIT Chairman Dennis Patch said they are thrilled with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision. Patch said there is no resource that is more vital to the continued existence and integrity of Indian tribes than our children. I'm Stephanie Sanchez.
Veterans are being honored in Rapid City, South Dakota, in recognition of Veterans Day. As Jim Kent reports, banners with the images and military service records of men and women who served during World War II are featured downtown.
Bill Casper is a Rapid City resident and an Air Force veteran. He honors World War II vets each year with an annual luncheon in memory of his uncle, who died at the Battle of the Bulge. The Veterans Honor Banner Project is an extension of Casper's respect for those of the greatest generation. But the former teacher noted that the concept didn't begin with him.
It started in Emporia, Kansas, and they do it in a big way. They put up hundreds of banners every year. They have a picnic. They have a parade.
The only Native American to be a part of the project this year is Marcella LeBeau. The former U.S. Army nurse from the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation landed at Omaha Beach, served in France and Belgium, and was at the Battle of the Bulge.
Well, that's a great, great honor. Bill Casper has done a lot for veterans.
Casper says he'd like more Native American veterans to get involved.
And I'm concerned because I know there are a lot of Native American veterans on the reservations, and the word just doesn't seem to get around down there.
The Rapid City Veterans Honor Banner Project will expand in 2018 to include those who served during the Korean and Vietnam Wars. I'm Jim Kent.
Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas is celebrating a milestone with its student newspaper, which turned 120 years old. The Haskell Indian Leader is the oldest Native American student newspaper in the U.S. Indians.com editor Kevin Abberesk spoke to students and staff this week about the importance of journalism and encouraged education.
Seems like a lot of young Native people honestly struggle with writing and reading, and you know, in order to establish that sort of passion, I guess, for writing and for telling stories, we really need a powerful and strong education system that foments that at a very early age. I was in third grade when I decided to be a writer, and I had really great teachers all along the way.
Alan Stevenson is a student at the Tribal College and writes for the paper.
The Indian Leader gives us our voice, and it's the first time we've had a voice in, you know, almost 120 years, because 120 years ago, we weren't even citizens. Have a voice and to practice our sovereignty.
The Indian Leader is still printed and distributed throughout campus and is available online. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Native Voice.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-1255. 8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Sam Bowman and Ray Bodwell. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Our engineer is Jenna Yokoyama. The KBU Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchant. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBU News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Reuben Lawrence. Thanks for listening and have a good night. Good night, Linda.
Good night, Reuben. Good night, Jenna.
Good night, everybody.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the millions of leaked documents dubbed the Paradise Papers bring some sunlight to an arena where secrecy is the whole point. The world of offshore financial centers, where a melange of the world's wealthiest stash money, bilk governments, and generally betray any notion of a social compact. It's great reporting. It involves trillions of dollars. Now what? We'll speak with investigative economist and author James Henry. Also on the show, after a man killed 26 people,